Us this morning, congressional candidate, a guy that for some reason or other wants to go back and do it again. He's done it before.
It's totally fixable, guys. Totally fixable. Come on, America.
Well, you've been there before and you want to go again, so you kind of know the lay of the land. Ryan Zinke, how are you?
Good. You know, I'm a little bit of a cheerleader because I know there's a lot of fear, uncertainty, and doubt. But let me assure you that America is not weak. America is far from weak. We have the strongest military in the face of the planet. We have resources. We have innovation. I would say this administration is weak, but America is not.
So let's talk about the Title 42 expiration. This is causing some difficulties down on our southern border.
Well, it should, because we really don't have a border. We have a line. And we could fix the border within a matter of weeks. It will take finishing the wall where you can. There's some places you can't build a wall. For instance, in the middle of the Rio Grande, you're not going to build a wall over the 2,000-foot cliffs at the Big Bend National Forest or National Park. But you are going to. We can finish the wall in a matter of weeks. But you also have to empower the Border Patrol to do their job. I mean, no more catch and release, process in Mexico, and empower ICE to do their job. And part of ICE is sex trafficking, drug trafficking. And the reason why the southern border, matters to Montana is there's drugs in every town in Montana, and they're all coming from the southern border. Yeah. We have sex trafficking and child trafficking in Kalispell, Montana. And it's all coming from the southern border and related to the southern border. And look, no nation can survive without a border, but we need to secure our border and find out and vet people that are here.
We also understand that this fentanyl stuff is also coming down I-90 from the ocean, the Seattle area.
I talked to Austin Knutson, who is doing a great job, and he's convinced that the overwhelming preponderance is coming right to the bucket from the southern border all the way straight. And you can see it across. I mean, we have crises across Montana. Now, one of them is it's our neighbors to the east in Blackfoot territory. And boy, the Blackfeet Nation is got a huge meth problem. They're losing kids, in the teens.
We had somebody in the other day who said the source was China through Mexico over the border.
We got that from the Montana Highway Patrol.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, the chemicals are coming from somewhere. They produce it and ship it up. But there's no doubt it goes back to anything that helps to open even a more open border today is a problem for Montana and for our country.
From what he said, is manufacturing this stuff, and they're kind of getting in business now with the cartels in Mexico.
It's interesting about China because you look at the Chinese businesses. There's no difference between the Chinese government and a Chinese business. Let's be clear. It's a communist country, and China remains a threat, certainly with Taiwan. And Taiwan matters to Montana. We send a lot of our pulse crops. Montana is, I think, the number one pulse crop, which is peas, and on our ag side. But we also get a lot of chips from Taiwan, a lot of the low-end chips. And I think they have, share of market share, maybe 50%. And everything runs on chips. So.
But you know what? We also send the majority of our soybeans to China.
We do, as I go around Montana, what I'm hearing is inflation is just killing Montanans. Gas prices, and we drive further than most people. An hour and a half drive is really a short drive, but when you're paying the prices we are at the gas pump, that makes a difference, and it affects fertilizer. I was at Home Depot, and my gosh, yesterday I was shocked at fertilizer because it's now time to put on the lawn, weed and feed, and it got to be almost triple. Inflation's a problem. There's a overwhelming sense that the country's going the wrong way.
But, 34% of the fertilizer, I believe, comes from Russia and another portion, or Russia and China, a combination. And China, reportedly, their media is shut down, so they don't really hear what's going on in Ukraine. But there's a Twitter group that is reporting on what is being broadcast over there, and it doesn't look like they're as nonpartisan as they would like us to think. They really are backing up Russia's story.
Well, and India typically is leaning to the West. They kind of bowed on this one too. But China, look at our critical minerals. So China has the preponderance of control of critical minerals that we need. And fertilizer, there's a lot of resources in the U.S. and potash fertilizer in Minnesota and that area, but we have to also and make sure we have access to that. And critical minerals, I think when a SEAL goes to battle, there's over a couple dozen of critical minerals, you know, the tritium sites that they use in their instrumentation and thermal imaging. But a lot of that, unfortunately, is either controlled or processed in China. And we need to make sure that we're not held hostage by foreign entities across whatever's, you know, critical to the economy.
Is globalization over then?
You know, it's interesting. I would say the Biden administration looks at two things, globalization and global warming. And they are navigating this country through those lenses. And both of those lenses have flaws. Globalization, I think, from a U.S. sovereignty perspective, is that we need to make sure that we have access and control the critical components that run this economy so we're never held hostage. And energy, we did it. When I came in as secretary, you know, why I'm an optimist, because I believe in Reagan, that, you know, I'm an optimist, and I think this country has both the merit and measure to fix it. But, you know, when I came in as secretary, our energy picture in this country was 8.3 million barrels a day and declining. In 2 years, we were 12.5 million barrels, the largest energy producer across the board, including wind. And it makes a difference because you're not being held hostage, and nor do you have to send troops overseas to fight for someone else's energy.
Well, now let's take a look at an American eye, using that eye, and look at Russia and Ukraine, and how can this possibly end?
I don't think there's any going back for Putin. I think he's the face of the evil and exposed himself as exactly what he is. We also have to fight for freedom where freedom is in trouble. And that was John F. Kennedy. We'd pay any price, endure any hardship to ensure the survival of liberty. It does not mean we have to put troops, because I'm a big Reagan fan, and that, you know, be very, very cautious when you do put troops in. But when you do put troops in, fight to win and bring them out. Mm-hmm. In this case, I think we should be giving, you know, Ukraine technical advice. We should be giving UAVs, armament, and make sure they can defend themselves. It's also exposed that Russia, while they have a lot of force, their combat readiness is not what certainly Putin thought, and he overreached. They've lost a lot of tanks, a lot of men, and Russia's response has been typical Russian: pound him in the dirt with artillery and weapons. They're not discriminate. And they have killed civilians, and I agree that he is a war criminal at this point in time. You can't ignore what's happening, because this is not Kandahar, it's not Fallujah, this is Europe. And it's opened up scars from World War II, and it's Europe.
I want to ask you a SEAL question. You're a SEAL commander. Is it possible to put together a mission to go in and take out Putin?
Ooh.
Just theoretically speaking, is that even possible?
Not without consequences of probably going, because you would have to penetrate fine. That would be a very, very difficult, and I think you'd probably use technology more than SEAL. I don't think we're at that point. The right policy is to isolate Mr. Putin.
Yeah.
Is lesson learned on energy. Europe gets 37% of their natural gas from Russia, and they don't have any storage capability. So if Russia turns off the valve, whatever is in the line, that's it. And they're even more vulnerable on crude. Mm-hmm. So this is what happens when a nation becomes reliant.
But all that's past history.
Well,
we can't do anything about that.
Well,
right
we
now.
Can though, but we can accelerate our energy components.
Even then, we're still dealing with the sins of the past. My question to you is: as a SEAL commander, could you put together a mission that would take out Putin? Theoretically speaking, just going back to your, could that possibly be done, Ryan?
If the President of the United States tasked me and a group of SEALs,
that's what I'm asking,
to do it, there are very few things on the face of this planet that SEALs couldn't do.
Yeah. That's been my experience too. I've been around you guys. I've never been one of you, but I've seen it.
Well, you know, it's funny. When I was a commander at SEAL Team 6, it was always, the answer is yes. What was the question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
National Parks Week. This draws right back to the time you were part of the, well, you were the Secretary of Interior, and you did a lot of work to try to get the backlog of the project, the many, many projects we needed to get done in the park.
Well, and when I came in, the number one problem from the superintendent's point of view was the infrastructure backlog. Billions of dollars of infrastructure, and basically our parks were falling apart. So we put together a package. It later became the Great American Outdoors Act. It's the largest investment in the history of this country for infrastructure for our national parks and forests. But you know what's happening, though, is you see there's a movement afoot to bring the public out of our parks, to limit access, to limit trails, to limit the experience. And the parks themselves were designed to make sure that you present a future and a legacy of our most precious gems in the country for the benefit and enjoyment of the people, so people could have an experience of it. Because in Montana, you get an outdoor experience, you're hooked for life. You're going to be an advocate. Your first visit to the park, you're going to love it. The experience is going to be great. You're going to be a park advocate for the rest of your life, right? But when you ration, there's ways to manage our issues in the park, but we got to make sure the infrastructure dollars go in. Look at the transportation. You know, I'm an advocate of maybe going back to an EV version of the big red buses, mm-hmm. because the experience in the park shouldn't be waiting in line, waiting in traffic. Every parking lot's full, all the trailheads. We need to manage our resources in the park better, to include connecting the trail systems, you know, the property adjacent to the parks. We can connect those trail systems. You know, when I was the secretary, I said, you know, why don't our trail systems connect between the Forest Service and park property? Well, you can't do that. Yeah, you can. It's really easy. Just connect the trails. It does is it gives more opportunity for more acres, increases public access, so the public can enjoy it and we can manage our resources better.
That's an interesting thought. You start out on Forest Service land and you just naturally go right into the park.
Well, and the Forest Service used to be much more active in building campsites.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of the older Forest Service campsites, you know, they haven't been also redone. And, you know, these campsites a lot of times were made for, you know, a smaller camper, but they don't accommodate what people use today, right?
Yeah,
so you got to update the sewer and make sure you don't have, you know, sewer leaking into our resources. But the parks themselves, I think they're in better shape because certainly the influx of cash, we just want to make sure that that money goes to its intended purpose about repairing our parks and be very, very careful about rationing the experience because it hurts the locals when you knock out. You have to have a reservation in advance. And for a lot of us that live in the valley, you know, it's nice to have an afternoon off and go to the park real quick and come back.
That was going to be my next question about the ticketed entry system or the reservation system during the summer.
It would never happen under my watch.
Seriously.
When Sperry burned down, there's a group, and I would say, of radicals that didn't want to rebuild Sperry. They want to return the park to its natural state, which means no humans. During COVID, there was a lot of excitement about, well, I'm glad that no people are coming to the park, because we need to save the park. No, you need to manage the park. The park and the management, to a degree, there's a lot of biologists, God bless them, but there's very few foresters. And in our public lands, we need to make sure that we have healthy forests, which means prescribed burns late in the season, removing the density of dead and dying trees around structures, you know, just best practices. I think our parks are so precious that we just have to preserve them, but you don't preserve them by limiting the experience. And then when you do that, you're going to have less people that will have a park experience, which is a major driver of generations that will defend them.
Wow.
So, but I'm an optimist. So fortunately, as we have in Montana and the district, we have Yellowstone and Glacier. Here, the snowpack is 110% this year, so it's good on the Teflon Forest on the western side, which is good.
Okay.
Right. So it'll be a little less forest fires this season. Yeah. You know, I'm watching too as you look. A lot of the forests are being cleaned up. We're removing the dead and dying timber, so there's active forest management going on in Montana, and I think that's a good thing.
All right, Ryan, as always, a great conversation. Thank you so much for spending time with us this morning.
Keep the faith.
You got it. Take care.